Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Mem Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We pick up today's Shiur at the bottom of Mem Gimel Amud Beis. Five lines from the bottom. The Gemara will open up with a long question, which is indicated by the long question mark, and you can see the kuf that's encircled to the left-hand side of the Gemara text. This long question extends quite a bit way down Daf Mem Dalet Omid Aleph. In order to appreciate this, we need to recap a little bit of what we discussed at the end of our previous shiur. We saw at the end of our previous shiur a shechita taking place, we can call it an angular shechita, where the knife started in what's called the Torbetz HaVeshet, which is something we described in our previous shiur. This is very high up on the esophagus, and it veered down into the Veshet itself, into the esophagus itself. There's no question that the Veshet itself is considered a proper Mokom HaShechita. The issue concerning the Torbetz HaVeshet was a machlokis, Rav and Shmuel. We saw in our previous Gemara that Rava paskined that such a shechita is no good. And he did that as a result of taking the stringencies of Rav and the stringencies of Shmuel. The Gemara raises a question concerning that type of legal ruling. A legal ruling which takes two stringencies of two different opinions, which in effect are contradictory, and yet combining the two stringencies and coming out with a ruling. This is the subject of the Gemara's question. Let us begin the Gemara five lines from the bottom. Omar mar brei deravina, mosvino tyufta. This indicates we raise a question or a repudiation, klapi sane de Rava, against Rava. The Gemara's expression, klapi sane de Rava, is a euphemism. Literally, the translation is against the enemies of Rava, but it means against Rava. It's explained why the Gemara, why Mar Bre Ravina chooses to use a euphemism, because in the course of this question, there will be a citation of a pasuk that says, "Vaksil b'choshech holech," the fool walks in darkness. And since he is addressing this question to Rava, it would appear to be a sign of disrespect to raise a question like this directly at Rava. So he uses a euphemism in presenting the question. So the source begins as follows: Li'olam hilchaso kedivrei Beis Hillel. In general, the halacha will always follow the ruling of Beis Hillel. One who wants to rule like Beis Shammai can do thusly. One who wants to rule like Beis Hillel can do thusly. This, by the way, from the beginning of the source till this point itself, is not very clear. It's not very smooth. It, in fact, may appear to be contradictory. The Gemara will take this up in the course of the Daf. Continuing in the source, Mikule Beis Shammai Umikule Beis Hillel, a person who seeks out the leniencies of Beis Shammai and the leniencies of Beis Hillel, is considered a Rasha, is considered evil. In other words, he's practicing a type of Judaism which demonstrates his desire to get away with as much as possible. Mechumrei Beis Shammai umechumrei Beis Hillel, a person who chooses to follow the stringent rulings of Beis Shammai and those of Beis Hillel, Olav HaKosuv Omer HaKsil B'choshech Holech, concerning someone like that, it says he is like a fool that walks in darkness. There is a great deal more detail to this particular problem than just the mere translation. The problem here of taking the stringencies of Beis Shammai and those of Beis Hillel is not speaking about totally disparate topics, that let us say in the topic of celebrating Sukkot, he chooses the stringencies of Beis Shammai, and in the area of drawing up legal documents, shtoros, he chooses the chumras of Beis Hillel. That wouldn't be a problem per se, because those are two disconnected areas. However, where in one area of legal concern one chooses the stringencies of Beis Shammai and those of Beis Hillel, where in effect they end up contradicting each other, that is what's addressed over here. And Rashi provides an example of that, but we will continue in the Gemara, and in fact we will elaborate on this in a little while. Ela, kebeis shamai kekuleyon ukechumrayon. Rather, the proper way to go is if you want to choose Beis Shammai, so adopt their leniencies and stringencies, kebeis hillel kekuleyon ukechumrayon. Or if you choose to follow Beis Hillel, then follow them consistently concerning their leniencies and their stringencies. At this point, you see a bracketed section. This is also illustrated by a bracket length indicator. You can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara a vertical dashed dotted line that indicates the length of the bracketed section. The purpose of these brackets is really for initially for skipping to assist in the reading. In this case, after the brackets, the question that we are raising remains, where the Gemara says that after the brackets, Mikol Mokoim Kashya, that after all is said and done, what Rava has done here, he has chosen two stringencies that in effect contradict each other. Within the bracketed section, the Gemara will delve into the question of the seeming inherent contradiction within the Braisa itself. But before we get to that, let's point out what exactly is the problem. Rava, as we saw, ruled unkosher the shechita that started in the Torbetz HaVeshet and veered down into the Veshet. How did he come to that conclusion? Well, he said that the incision made in the Torbetz HaVeshet was at least a nekev mashu, and a nekev mashu will passel in the Torbetz HaVeshet. The problem here is that saying that a nekev mashu passels in the Torbetz HaVeshet, you're in effect saying that that is a mokom hashchita. And just like the Veshet itself, which is a mokom hashchita, becomes possel with a nekev mashu, so too in the Torbetz HaVeshet. However, if it's considered a mokom hashchita, then what was being done in that angular shechita was actually a good shechita. He started in the Torbetz HaVeshet. It's not considered a nekev, that kind of incision that you make as part of the slaughtering. That's obvious. So the question is that how is it that Rava looked at the Torbetz HaVeshet as being a place that a nekev mashu passels? That in and of itself would indicate that it's considered a mokom hashchita, and yet Rava is saying that he started the shchita improperly outside the mokom hashchita. Now let us take a look at the Rashi. You'll notice there's a Rashi with a little star in it. We've added the star, and we'll pick up from that point in the Rashi. Rashi says, "Vahani de Rava, the ruling of Rava, nami sasran adodi, are also inherently contradictory." Since he said that the hole in the Torbetz HaVeshet is considered a problematic hole, even if it's of a very small nature, that's because it's considered a mokom shchita, and as such, a nekev mashu could be a problem. And he also ruled that it's not considered a good shechita because he started outside the Mokom Shechita, but Ash, and by the same place that a second ago he was saying that a Nekev Mashu passels indicating that it is a Mokom Shechita, he then paskin like Shmuel that said he started his shechita outside the Mokom HaShechita because it's not Lav Mokom Shechita Vishtakach the Sasun Milsei the Rova Hadodi. That is called an inherent contradiction. That will be the question we'll have to pick up with after the bracketed section. However, within the brackets, the Gemara points out that the source itself had an inherent contradiction. Ha, Gufa, Kashi, we're looking at the Gemara four lines from the top. The Gemara says the source itself is problematic. Amris, you said, on the one hand, Li'oilom halocho kedivrei Beis Hillel, which means that the halocha shall always follow the ruling of Beis Hillel. V'hodar toni, and then in the same source we taught, V'horoitz alasus kedivrei Beis Shammai yase, if you want to follow Beis Shammai, you have that option. But you just got finished saying that the halacha always shall follow Beis Hillel. So the Gemara answers, one of two answers, lo kashya, kan kodem baskol, kan le'achar baskol. These two rulings in the source represent two different periods in time. Baskol is a heavenly voice, a type of prophecy or heavenly ruling. The Baskol said at a certain point in time that the halacha shall follow Beis Hillel. Prior to that heavenly voice, prior to that Baskol, one had the option of following rulings of Beis Shammai. After the Baskol, that's what the beginning of the source reflects when it says, Li'olam halacha kedivrei Beis Hillel. The Iboyesema, another approach, is Af La'achar Basko. This source reflects a period of time after the Basko. If that be the case, so how can there be a statement in the source that you can follow Beis Shammai? Verebi Yoshua He. The section of the source that said that if you want to follow Beis Shammai, you can do so, that is a statement taught, even though his name doesn't appear over here, but that's according to the authority of Rebbe Yoshua de Omar, Ein Mashgichin Bebaskol, who says that one does not pay attention to heavenly rulings, to heavenly voices. They don't set the order of the day. And therefore, according to Rebbe Yoshua, even though a Baskol announced one shall follow Beis Hillel, it is nevertheless not binding. The Gemara continues, Mikol Mokom Kashya. But nevertheless, we still have a problem. The problem is that which we described before concerning Rava's ruling. How can he choose the stringencies of Rav and of Shmuel and come out with a ruling? Omar Rabbi Rav Tovos. Rav Tovos comes up with a new approach to Rava's ruling, and hence we've called this Roman numeral number 2. This is, of course, following the Roman numeral number 1 from Mem Gimel Omid Beis. Rav Tovos tells us, Kula Kerav Ovda. Rava's ruling was in total consistency with Rav. In other words, up till now, we've seen Rav presented in a certain light that, according to this, was incorrect, and there's a new approach to understanding Rav. And the Gemara continues, leading up to the new presentation of Rav. The Chiosa Rami Bar Yecheskel Omar, when Rami Bar Yecheskel came, he told us, Lo Tatsisu Lehulani Kloli Dekayel Yehuda Achi Mishmei De Rav. Don't heed, Tatsisu, listen or heed the rulings that my brother Yehuda, who learned by Rav and subsequently by Shmuel, so we have teachings of Rav, the unnamed teachings of Rav were brought to us by Rabbi Yehuda, the brother of Rami Bar Yecheskel. So Rami Bar Yecheskel says, don't heed his presentation of Rav, and rather, Hochi Omar Rav. Thusly says Rav, Veshet Nosnu Bo Chachomim Shiur. The Veshet, the esophagus, has boundaries with regard to up till what point there is an allowance to Shecht. So by saying that, Midika Omar Nosnu Bo Chachomim Shiur, from the fact that he said the Chachomim have stated boundaries on the Veshet, Michal de Turbitz HaVeshet Lav Mokum Shchitahu, then we see Rav himself saying that the Turbat Saveshet is not a kud, is not an acceptable mokom shchita. And even so, the Ka'omar b'mashu, even so, even though it's not considered a mokom shchita, it's not considered having a din of veshet, but rather it's turbas haveshet and not veshet, nevertheless, its nekev is b'mashu. So when Rava ruled that this angular shchita was no good, it's very simply no good because he started outside the mokom shchita. And at the same time, he was making a hole. The incision made that animal a trefa. So, and that's all according to Rav. Hence, there is no problem with Rava's psak as being taking the taking of two contradictory approaches. But rather, Rava is reflecting Rav's shita straight through. Being that we've mentioned the Turbat HaVeshet as being outside the Mokom Shchita, and we're talking about the Veshet, the Gemara wants to know what are the boundaries of the Veshet that is allowed for slaughtering. Lemalo ad kamo. So how far up toward the head can one shecht the veshet? Omar Rav Nachman, ad kidei tfisas yad. Rashi explains this. Ad kidei tfisas yad. Tzorach lehaniach letzad horoish kisholosh etzbos v'arba. One would have to look at the very end of the veshet and leave 3 to 4 fingers width of area of length, we'll say 3 to 4 fingers width along the veshet that is considered not mokom hashrita, and then from that point downwards would be considered mokom hashrita. We want to remind you that you should have the book Sichas Chulin available, the book of illustrations that accompanies Maseches Chulin, which we've mentioned already numerous times, to have available especially for this perek. So we continue. Lamato ad kamo, on the downside, or further down, as you go to the end of the veshet, till what point is acceptable for shchita, below which would not be acceptable. Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rabo Bar Avua, ad kedei she yasir. Literally, it's until the end of the place that there are their hair-like tissue matter. This is a type of hairy substance that is found on what's called the keres hapnimi. So up or down till that point, till the kadesh yasi, where the hairy substance appears, one can shecht. It can be explained that that is in effect saying the entire veshet, all the way down till the end of the veshet, is acceptable. The Gemara asks, Amy, is that so that you can shecht all the way till the end of the veshet? V'omar Ravino, Omar Geniva, Mishmei Derav, Tefach beveshet somuch lekeres zehu keres hapnimi. A hand's breadth of veshet next to the keres. The keres is what is the, we'll call the first stomach chamber. A tefach is a hand breadth of veshet next to the keres. That's called keres, so that you haven't even reached the actual keres, but you're still at the end of the veshet, a hand's breadth of veshet, and you're already labeling that keres hapnimi. Now, if it were mutter to shecht until where the hair appears, amai ki ka shochat bekeres ka shochit. If you're labeling a hand's breadth of the end of the veshet as keres hapnimi, and you were telling me that you can shecht all the way down till the mokom sheyasir, the mokom sheyasir where the hairs start appearing is beyond that last hand breadth. So But Rav has taught that the final handbreadth of Veshet is already labeled Keres. So how can you possibly shecht all the way down till the Mokom Shiasir? If you would be doing that, you're basically shechting in the Keres. And that's not Veshet, that's too far down. Amal. So to answer this question, we have two approaches, and we've labeled them. Here is number one, Amal. We should rather restate the halacha of Rav concerning that handbreadth as follows. Tefach bekeres somuch leveshet zehu keres hapnimi. That means the first handbreadth of the keres after the end of the veshet, that first handbreadth of keres is called keres hapnimi. And at that point, it would be ruined if a hole of a mashu would appear there. However, further into the digestive system, beyond that first handbreadth, then only if rove of the keres were torn would there be a problem of trephus. So, to go over this most recent point, unlike that which we said before, that the final tefach of veshet is already called keres hapnimi, not true. But rather, it's the first handbreadth of keres that is called keres hapnimi. And the nafgamina for us right now is that that area of keres would be subject to a psul of a nekev mashu. Beyond that, we would be lenient. However, as far as Mokom Shchita is concerned, we can stick with what we said before, Ad Kedei Shiyasir. In other words, the entire Shveshet, including the final handbreath, it's because only after that point do you get into something labeled Keres. But till the Mokom Shiyasir, which is the entire Veshet, it's called Veshet. E Boyes Emo, another approach to resolving that which we've said before, is ki ka'omar Rav. When Rav said the original statement of tefach beveshet samuch lekeres is called keres apnimi, that final tefach of veshet is already called keres. That's betura. That's with regard to an ox, demasir tfei, that happens to have a lot of these hair-like fibers in its system. The Rashi says on the first line under the Gemara text, "Betura de Masir Tvei, Shaseyar Nichnas Besoicha Veshet Tefach." The Seyar enters the Veshet, or is found in the Veshet of Tefach, up from the Keres into the bottom of the Veshet. Ula Oilom Mokom Shchito Havi Ba Veshet Ad Mokom HaSeyar. And we'll stay with what we said, that the Mokom Shchita is until wherever the Seyar appears. It just so happens that in general the Seyar, the hair-like substance, doesn't appear in the Veshet itself, and therefore you can shecht the entire Veshet. However, if you're dealing with the Tura, the Shor, the hair-like substance in fact starts a bit early into that final Tefach of Veshet, and hence there, in the case of a Shor, you should not shecht in that area, because that's already called Mokom HaSeyar. As you can see, we have a slash mark indicating that that which follows is a brand new idea. And on the outside margin, we've given this a title, Nosei. We mentioned here two points, Turbetz HaVeshet, Shenital Min Alechi. We'll speak about the Turbetz HaVeshet, the uppermost part of the Veshet has been dislocated from the jaw, and Ikur Simonim, the issue of uprooted neck organs, the trachea and esophagus. Omar Rav Nachman Omar Shmuel, Turbetz HaVeshet Shenital Kuloi Milechi Kosher. The Turbetz HaVeshet that is completely removed from the jaw is kosher. We can't emphasize enough that one's understanding of these sugis will be so highly improved if you have access to the Sichas Chulin book of illustrations that you can follow along with in these Gemaras. Vitana Tuna, and we have a Mishnah that bears this out. It's a Mishnah on Daf Nun Dalet. Nital Lechi Hatachton Kosher. If the bottom jaw of the animal is removed, the animal is still considered kosher. The Rashi points out, Nital Lechi Hatachton Kosher, Vekivan Shenital Lechi Nitlishu Hasimonim. Since the Lechi has been removed, you can rest assured that the neck organs have been dislodged from where they naturally are attached. Shebelechi hatachton heim mechuborim. They are, in general, attached to that lower jaw. Continuing in the Gemara, Maskif lo Rav Papa. Rav Papa asks, Vo'ikor ikor simonim. But what about the problem of uprooted neck organs? According to what we've been teaching just now, we seem to have described the neck organs that are dislodged, and it's being kosher. But one of the psulim in Shechita, one of the things that renders Shechita unfit, is a situation where we have neck organs that are uprooted from their natural point of growth. The Gemara asks, well, it's fine that Rav Papa is raising this question, but Ula Rav Papa Kashya Masnisin Nital Lechi Atachton Kosher. According to Rav Papa, how is he to deal with the Tanaic source itself that says that if the lower jaw is removed, it's okay? So the Gemara answers, as far as Rav Papa and the Tanaic source are concerned, there is no problem. Bishlamo Masnisin L'Rav Papa Lo Kashya. The Tanaic source is not a kasha, as will be explained in a minute. However, Rav Papa still will have difficulties with Shmuel's teaching. So, as far as the Tanaic source is concerned, Bishlam Masnisin Rav Papa Lo Kashya, Ha De Akur Yakuri, Ha De Egum Agumi Me'ilui Simonim. These expressions need careful explanation, and we will do so accordingly with the Rashi. The Rashi says, Ha de akur akuri, ikur simonim, the problem of ikur simonim that Rav Papa raised, kishinekar haveshet min halechi u min habosar. That's a case where the esophagus is removed from the jaw and from the surrounding flesh. That is ikur simonim. However, the Tanaic source that spoke about nita lechi atachton kosher, Rashi continues, Ha de igum igumi mi'ului simonim. Shenigmam halechi, the jaw bone has been removed min habosor shemutal al hasimonim bein halechi vasimon. The jaw bone has been removed from the flesh, from the meat that is that contains the neck organs. This meat lies between the jaw, the jawbone, and the neck organs. So the lav ikor hu. This is not a problem of ikor. Why? Shehasimonim me'urin babosar. The neck organs are still contained within the flesh, within the meat that surrounds them. So, very simply stated, if you have neck organs that have been ripped away from the surrounding meat, that's ikor simonim. If, however, you have a jaw that's been removed, however, the flesh that surrounds the neck organs is still in place with the neck organs attached, that is not a problem. That's kosher. So Rav Papa can coexist with the Tanaic source without any problem. However, as the Gemara goes on to say, Elo l'Shmuel kashya, but Shmuel's ruling is a problem for Rav Papa, because Shmuel mentioned Turbet Zaveshet Shenital Kulo Mi Lechi. That's mashma, that implies that the Turbet Zaveshet itself was dislodged from the surrounding flesh. And according, as far as Rav Papa is concerned, once that happens, you have a problem of treifus. Whereas Shmuel was saying that that's okay. So the Gemara goes on to say, Lo Tema Kulo, as far as Shmuel's original statement, and we could use the arrows that we've provided to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text to help you find where this was stated originally. So instead of saying, as the original statement of Shmuel had, Kulo, rather, Elo Emo Ruboi. which then means Shmuel described Turbetz HaVeshet, that the majority of which was removed from the Lechi as being kosher. And Rav Papa then would be saying, if you have a minority still attached, it's still okay. The only time you have a problem is if it's completely removed from the surrounding flesh. However, the Gemara is not finished. The Omar Rabba Bar Chanan Shmuel Simonim Shenildaldalu Beruban Trefa. Here you have a comment of Shmuel himself saying that if Rove has been detached, there is a problem. So how can you say, just the line above, that if Rove has been detached, it still is okay, when here you have Rubo as being a problem? And with our dashed underlining, this helps you to see much more quickly the problem. Omar Rav Shisha Brei Rav Idi. Rav Shisha answers that within the realm of simonim, neck organs that have been dislodged in their majority, the majority surrounding flesh has been dislodged, there is still room for making a distinction. Ha de ikpal ikpuli, ha veha de ifruk ifruki. This too will it will be a benefit to learn the Rashi. De ikpal ikpuli shiniklaf me'al habosar. It's been peeled away from the surrounding flesh. In other words, the neck organ has been peeled away. Ikpal kamova niklaf, and Rashi shows you the etymology of that word. The ifrik ifruki kedavar haneka b'koyach. So we should point out that if it's simply been peeled away, the rove has been peeled away, leaving a minority still attached, that's okay. It's still kosher. However, the ifrik ifruki, Rashi says, kedavar haneka b'koyach, shaneka kan ma'at v'kan ma'at. This is illustrated in the Sichas Chulin Book of Illustrations, where the neck organ and its surrounding meat have been dislodged a little here, a little there, in a, we'll call it maybe a perforated fashion around the neck organ. However, there are so many of these little dislodgings, ad rubo, until it amounts to a majority of the circumference of the neck organ is dislodged from the surrounding meat. The oisamir hamachuber eino machuber biyachad. That minority amount that remains attached is not considered an attachment. Hilkoch lav chibur hu delo hodar bari. It's not considered an attachment because it will not get better. However, in the case of ikpal ikpuli, we can deduce that since it was peeled away as opposed to being ripped away bekoach, forcibly ripped away, the case of ikpal ikpuli has a chance of growing back and getting better. The Gemara now turns to a new topic, quoting from the Mishnah, Upsukas Hagargeres, that an animal whose trachea, whose windpipe is split, it's a problem of trephus. The Gemara wants to know how much split open before you come to the Shechita represents a problem. Tana, kama psukas hagargeres beruba. If rove of the trachea has been sliced open, then the rove, the majority, is sliced open before you get to it, before you start the Shechita, that is psukas hagargeres. The kama ruba, how do we define rove? So regarding this, we will have two opinions, two versions as to what Rav rules. Rav Omar, roiv uvya, rove of the thickness. The Amri law, roiv chalola. Another version of Rav is rove of the space of the empty space that forms the cavity of the tube. The illustration book will be of great help to appreciate these two versions. But as far as verbally, if we try to explain this, if you start, let us say, from the back of the neck of the animal and work toward the underside of the throat, and you take a cross section, let's say, of the of the trachea, you will find that you will be cutting the majority of the thickness of the entire tube, including tube wall thickness. That's called rov uvya. You will reach the majority of the diameter, if you will, of the tube prior to a point where you reach a majority of the halal, of the open space that forms the tube. The reason for this is that there is a lot of cartilage, a thicker layer of cartilage that's part of, we'll say, the entire circumference of the tube. That large layer of cartilage, or thick layer of cartilage, is located toward the back of the back of the neck of the trachea, so that you're in effect cutting the majority of the thickness of the uvula before you get to rov halal. The other opinion, which in effect is a lenient opinion, would say that only when you reach the majority of the open space of the tube is it to be considered a trepha. But if you haven't reached a majority of the halal, of the airspace, then you haven't created a trepha, or you don't have a trepha. Hahib sukas hagageres de asoi lekame derav, an incident involving an animal with a pre-cut open, a pre-cut gargaris. Before we learn the Gemara, let's glance at the topic heading that we've assigned to this piece of Gemara. The nose is, as we just read, psukas gargaris shegila rav, a case of an animal with a trachea cut open that came to Rav's attention. Achare shebodkoi beroiv uvya, after Rav checked out to see whether rov of the thickness of the tube has been cut, dehavei l'chumra, determining trefus based on rov uvya is itself a stringency. The rov uvya eino rov halola. You will reach the majority of the uvya before you reach the majority of the halal, of the airspace. So after Rav did a checking like that, shocha l'rabo bar barchana, he sent it to Rabo, shebotko b'roiv halola v'hichshiro, and he checked to determine whether rov of the airspace was opened, was revealed, and since it wasn't so, even though rov uvyo may have already been cut open, but not rov halola v'hichshiro, he announced that it's kosher, v'kona mimeno basar, and he went ahead and even purchased meat from that animal that he ruled upon. As the Gemara goes on, we'll then notice a series of triangles that accompany this sugya, and they have been explained under the Mivneh structural note, where you see the triangle featured in the outside margin. Kushos al hanhogas Rabo Barbachana. There'll be a series of questions on Rabo Barbachana's behavior in this story. So now we pick up the Gemara again from the end of the top line. Hahi psukas hagageres dasoy lekame derav, a case of an animal with a split open trachea that came to Rav's attention. Yosef v'kabodik lo beroiv uvya. He checked whether rov of the thickness, a rov of the diameter of the trachea was open. Omru le Rav Kana Rav Asi the Rav. These two rabbis who were present, they said to Rav, "Limadetonu Rabenu, you have taught us beroiv halola, that trefus is not established unless rov of the airspace has been cut open, which is a leniency. So why are you treating this with stringency?" Shadre v'kame de Rabo Barbachana. Rav sent this case to Rabo Barbachana. Bodka barov chalolo v'achshara. Rabo Barbachana checked to see whether rov of the airspace was cut open, and being that it had not reached a rov of airspace, even though it was rov of the diameter of this trachea was cut open, v'achshara, since it wasn't rov chalolo, he ruled it to be kosher. V'zovan mino betleiser is to read pshiti bisra, and he purchased, zovan, he purchased from that meat that he ruled upon as being kosher. He bought, this is a, the numbers here are a number of coins. Tleisar, 13, istri pshiti is a type of coin. Bisra, he bought meat paying 13 istri pshiti for it. Vehechi ovid hachi. First of all, we mentioned before the triangles represent questions. We will see a number of questions on Rabbah's behavior. So the first question is, how could he do thusly? How could Rabbah allow the meat when it seemed that Rav had prior ruled on that very same animal that it's unacceptable? V'hotanya, do we not have the following source that says Chocham Shetimei Ein Chaveir Rashoi L'Taher? If a sage ruled that something is Tomei, a fellow scholar cannot rule to the contrary that it's Tohar. Osar Ein Chaveir Rashoi L'Hatir. If a Chocham ruled something to be forbidden, so a colleague cannot then rule on the same matter that it is allowed. But that's what seemed to have happened over here at the first stage, and we had a little 1 and 2 that we placed in the Gemara. On the third line from the top, it seemed that Rav was Boidek Barov Uvya, and Rav Uvya had been cut open. And at that point, it would seem that Rav ruled that it's forbidden. And then Rav himself sent it on to Rabbah for, let's say, in anticipation of getting a ruling of leniency. But how could that be? Once a chacham forbids something, a kali cannot come and allow it. So the Gemara answers, Shaini chacha, the Rav lo asar mesar. Rav didn't issue a ruling. All that really happened, if you read the story carefully, all it says that Rav was checking out the Rav Uvya. He was checking out, but he didn't issue a ruling. Now we have another question. This is a long question, and we've illustrated that with the long question marking the kuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. The Gemara asks, V'kevon de'oiri ba'chacham, once a chacham ruled on the meat, in other words, we have meat that had to, that wasn't clearly kosher, but it was rendered kosher as a result of a legal ruling. Meat that's like that, that is acceptable only because it was ruled upon, is something that you would expect pious individuals to stay away from. V'kevon de'oiri bo'chocham hefi ochal mino. Since it's meat that underwent a legal ruling, how is it that Rabbo Bar Bar Chana ate from it? For Hoksiv, we have a pasuk from Yecheskel where Yecheskel is talking to the Almighty and priding himself on certain aspects or certain types of behavior that he adopted, and it says, "V'omar aho Hashem Elokim hinei nafshi lo mituma'o unevelo trefel ochalti minu urai v'ad ato v'lobo b'fi basar pigol." That's the pasuk. Now the Gemara breaks it down. Hine nafshi lo mitumaa shelo hirharti b'yom lavoli de tuma b'layla. The prophet says that I had control of my thoughts, and that during the daytime I didn't have any lewd thoughts or thoughts of immorality that would that could cause me to come to a male emission, which is tuma balayla, and that is of course quite an accomplishment to be in total control of one's thoughts. The pasuk went on to say unavela utrefa lo achalti. What does that mean? That he didn't eat nevela trefa. Obviously, it's not referring to the common form of nevela trefa, which everyone is forbidden in eating. Why would the Navi pride himself if he did what's incumbent upon anyone anyway? However, what is meant by this phrase, nevela trefa lo chalti, is shelo achalti basar kuskus me'olam. In other words, I never ate from meat that kuskus means slaughter quickly. That's, we've learned actually in a previous sugya, the sugya of the Misukenes. an animal that's deathly ill, that if you shecht it before it actually dies, the meat will be kosher. Nevertheless, the prophet was saying, Yechezkel was saying, I didn't eat from meat that they had to shecht very quickly to get it in before it dropped dead. V'lo bo b'fi basar pigol. What is he saying in this case? Shalochalti mi behemo shahur b'chacham. I did not eat from meat that had to undergo a rabbinic ruling. Now we've dashed underlined this because this is really the heart of the question. Mishum Rabbi Nosson Amru Shelo Achalti Mi Behemo Shelo Hurmu Matnosel. When the prophet was exclaiming that I didn't eat from Basar Pigol, he was in effect saying I didn't eat from meat whose Kohen or priestly portions have not been removed. When you're dealing with the slaughtering of common animals as opposed to sacrifices, the Zroa, Lachayim, Vakeva, parts of an animal are given to the Kohen. The Zroa, the forearm, the Lachayim, the cheek, and the Keva, the one of the stomachs, is given to a Kohen. The Novi is saying that even though meat that had not had these sections removed, even though it's okay to eat it anyway, I, the Novi was saying, pride myself on the fact that I only ate from meat that the priestly tithes have already been removed. But once again, not to lose sight of the forest for the trees, I want to emphasize Shelo Achalti Mebehemo Shehur B'Chacham. And how could, if the Novi is priding himself on that, how is it, so it must be a good thing to avoid, how is it then Rabo Bar Bachana ate from such meat? Hani mili milsa detalya besvora. The objection, or the quasi-objection to eating meat that had to go through rabbinic ruling, that's only if the nature of the ruling was something based on svara, based on personal insight, personal conclusions. Rabo Bar Bachana agamre somach. Rabo Bar Bachana was relying not upon svara. A svara is something that can be challenged. He was relying on an oral tradition that he had. And as a result of that, that's not something that the Novi would have found any objection to. His oral tradition stated that until Rov Chalola is sliced open or is cut open, there is absolutely no problem. The Gemara asks, but still, as far as his behavior, that's the Rabo Bar Bachana, is there not the following problem? The tapuk lei mishum chashoda. Should he not have, let's say, derived or come to a conclusion of not buying from this meat based on the suspicion that this kind of situation arouses? This is what's called mishum chashoda, that in exchange for a psak of heter, maybe he's getting the meat for cheap. He's getting a good deal. And here what happened was he ruled a ruling of leniency, of allowance, and maybe the meat that he paid for, remember we saw he paid 13 istri pshiti for meat, maybe that same quantity of meat for anyone else would have been more than 13 coins for that quantity. So should he not have avoided this seeming suspicion that arises that in exchange for his lenient ruling he got a good deal? Desanya Donas Adin, a judge that rules on a case, Zika of the Chiev, he exonerates one, obligates another, Timei Vatiher, Osa Vahitir, all different kinds of rulings, Vechein Ho'edim She'idu Kulon Rashoyim Likach, the likewise witnesses that testify. So kulan rashoyin likach, they can all they have a right to buy from whatever they were ruling or testified on. Avalam chachamim, however, the chachamim said harchek min hakiur min adoimelo. A person should stay away from things that are ugly or look suspicious. And in this case, just to review the problem. It may look that, well, in order to get cheap meat, he issued the lenient ruling. So is that not a problem? The Gemara answers, Hani Mili, the only time a problem arises with regard to, say, rulings in exchange for cheap, for good deals, that's midi de mazvin b'shuma. That's when you're dealing with things that are sold through shuma, means estimation, as opposed to things sold by unit or by weight. Hacha miskela muchach. Miskela is mishkal, the tuf and the shin interchange. So here the weight proves. In other words, he paid 13 coins for meat that was sold by weight. And everyone saw that he paid the per unit, say per pound, cost of meat, just like everyone else would pay. Rashi, three lines under the Gemara, says Miskala Muchach, Shakol Royin, Shu Shokel Litra, Bedinor Kemoso. Everyone sees that he was weighing out meat, let's say a pound of meat for a dinner type of coin. L'achirim V'nosen Amos Miad. That the in this case the owner of the meat was weighing out the meat to him, to Rabba Barachana, just like he would weigh it out to anyone else, and he paid for it immediately. And to the Gemara goes on illustrating this this type of case with another story. Kiha de Rava Shara Trefsa. It happened once upon a time that Rava issued a lenient ruling regarding a trefa, meaning a ruling of allowance concerning an animal, the zavan min al-bisra, and he bought meat from that very animal that he ruled is allowed. Omra le bas Rav Chisda, the daughter of Rav Chisda, who happened to be Rava's wife, so she says to her husband, Abba, that's Rav Chisda, my father, Shari Bukhra, he ruled concerning a firstborn male animal, which is something that until it develops a blemish, it's considered kochim, and you cannot slaughter it outside the Beis HaMikdash, and especially in a time where there is no Beis HaMikdash, a b'chor without a ruling of blemish is totally forbidden. So Rav Chisda once ruled concerning a b'chor, that's shori, allowed b'chra, a firstborn. He said that this animal now has a permanent blemish, which means that it can now be slaughtered outside the Beis HaMikdash and eaten as more or less as common meat. Velo zavan minei bisra, and Rav Chisda refused to purchase meat from the animal that he ruled on. So the question is, what about Rava? He doesn't seem to follow the ways of his father-in-law, where Rava himself was matir a trefa and then bought from that meat. We've dashed underlined shora trefa, and we've dashed line shori buchra. Omar lo. So Rava answered his wife, hani mili buchra, the restriction that one ought to exercise when ruling upon meat and then not buying from it, that's true in the case of something like a buchor. The b'chor, when you receive a ruling of allowance, there is still one restriction. It cannot be weighed out and sold. However, it can be sold through estimation. The ashuma mizdavin, it's sold through estimation. And in such a case, so then things can become very subjective. However, hocha, in my case, where I was matir a trefa, the trefa was a regular chulin animal, not a b'chor, Miskula Muchach, the scale shows or proves that I'm not getting any special deal. My Ika, what might you still say is a problem? Mishum Umtsum Al Yasa, that I'm getting the best cut of meat better than what other people would get. That is not characteristic of this specific case, because Kol Yom Umtsum Al Yasa Zavnu Li, people honor me every day with good cuts, with the best cuts of meat. Umtsa is a piece of meat. Ma'al yasob, good cuts of meat. So that the fact that today I'm getting a good cut of meat is not something out of the ordinary. It's not something that one would associate with the fact that I gave a lenient ruling. As we go on in the Gemara, we see diamonds with colored in tips. These are a series of Memros Shel Rav Chisda, as we've indicated under our Mivneh heading in the outside margin. Omar Rav Chisda, Eizehu Talmud Chacham. What would be characteristic of someone that we could categorize as a Talmud Chacham, a Talmudic sage? Tosfos adds, when we're talking about this category of Talmud Chacham, we're talking about someone that we would return a lost article to if he claims he recognizes it as his own, even without giving specific simonim, specific signs that or recognizable marks that it is his. In other words, we're talking about someone that has to have a certain high level of trustworthiness, that we would be able to trust him by saying, regarding a lost item that was found, I recognize that to be mine. So, to whom would we return someone based on what's called Tavius Ayin alone? Ze Horoya Trefa Li'atzmo. That is someone that, on concerning his own animal, he would look at it if there was a question of trefus, something that's doubtful, that maybe it's a trefa, he would look at it and rule stringently, in effect, ruling that his animal is not good. That shows us that we are dealing with a person that does not have a lust for money. He's willing for the sake of halacha to dispose of his own animal. Someone like that you can trust when it comes to his claiming that a lost item is his. The Omar Rav Chisda, Ezu Soine Matonas Yichye. The Pasuk in Mishlei says that one who disdains the receipt of gifts shall live a long life. What is an illustration of someone like that? Ze Horoya Trefa Li'atzmo. This is someone who would willingly, for the sake of halacha, dispose of his own meat, so you can rest assured that he certainly would find gifts that others give him, something he would not want. As Rashi says, and we've dashed underline it, Sha'af al Shaloi Eino Chomeid Lahachriya Lehetar, even his own possessions, he doesn't have a special desire for, and which would motivate him to rule leniently. Someone like that, we can say, is a Soine Matonos, and would be worthy of the bracha of long life. Dorash Marzutra Mishmei Rav Chisda. Anyone who is familiar with, was learned the written Torah, the Torah Shebiksav, learned Mishnayos, Shones, the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Mishnayos, and is Roe Treif Le'atzmo, someone that we just described, is willing to offer a ruling of stringency regarding his own animal. This is a person who has learned Gemara. Gemara is the resolution and explanation of difficult Mishnayos. Olav Hakosav Omer, regarding such a person, the Pasuk says, Yagia Kapecha Kisochal Ashrecha V'toiv Loch. The Marsha explains that this pasuk describes someone, yegia kapecha, someone who has invested energies in the study of Torah, is fortunate and will derive benefit. As far as this particular citation right now, Rashi at the bottom line says, yegia kapecha ki sochal, the kevon de al shelo eino chomeid, since regarding his own possessions, he doesn't have special lust for them. Kol shekein she'eno chomeid b'shel achirim. Certainly, he will have no desire for that which is not his, lignoiv v'ligzol, to steal those things. Rav Zvid Omar, zoche v'noichel shnei olamos. The one described in this pasuk, in fact, the one that we just described before, who was Kervishon, who wrote Trefa Le'atzmon, Shemish Tamil Chomim, he will merit two worlds. Ho'olam Hazeh, Vo'olam Haba. And how do you see this in the pasuk? Ashrecha b'olam hazeh, fortunate are you in this world, v'toiv loch l'olam haba, and you will benefit in the next world as well. The double expression of ashrecha v'tov loch indicates this idea of benefit in both worlds. Reb Elazar, we have underlined Reb Elazar and called him Aleph. We want to compare Reb Elazar here with Rabbi Zera a few lines later, where we've underlined him and called him Beis. Two personal practices with two different practices, as will be seen in the Gemara. This sugya is all under the heading of the title that we've assigned, that we could have read a little earlier, but in the outside margin we've assigned the sugya of Sonei Matanos Yichya. One who does not, one who disdains receiving gifts has the merit of living a long life. Reb Elazar, ki havu mishadri le mibei nesi'o midi. Reb Elazar, when there was sent to him from the house of the Jewish leadership, the Bei Nesi'o, anything, lo shokil, he would not accept it. The ki havu mizamni le, and when he was invited to a meal, lo ozil, he would not go. Omar, he would exclaim, lo koboi mor te'ichi, do you not want me? He's addressing the Beis Hanasi, the leader, the head of the Jewish community, and say, do you, sir, not want me to live? D'chtiv v'sonei matanos yichye. It says that one who hates the receipt of gifts shall live. And by your trying to have me accept gifts, you would be then interfering with this bracha of yichye, of living. Rabbi Zera, now, as we noted under Reb Elazar, there were two situations. One involved the sending of gifts to Reb Elazar, and the second involved his being invited. Rabbi Zera will also feature, under Rabbi Zera will feature these two phenomena. Ki mishadri le lo shakil, like Reb Elazar, Rabbi Zera likewise, when offered gifts, would not accept. However, ki havu mezamnin le ozil, when he was invited to a meal, he would go. And we've dashed underlined ozil, and two lines above at the beginning of the line you see lo ozil. Here's the contrast. Omar, and Rabbi Zera explained why he would go, when after all, we just saw he himself did not want to accept gifts. He explains, Isyakuri hu demisyakru bi. At the very top of Mem Hei Omen Aleph, the Gemara tells us that they enjoy a sense of honor by my dining with them, so that it's their pleasure that I am with them, and therefore, since they are deriving the pleasure, it's not categorized as if I am receiving a gift. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.